All right, everyone. We're going to reconvene back here and go through our Q&A. We had that text line, and it occurred to me, you know, partway through the evening that with a group as small as we have, you know, John's right here, and y'all can just talk to him. So as far as the Q&As go, we're probably interacting over dinner and such like that. And then we had a couple of texts that come in, and we're going to go through those. But then if there are other questions that come up, we can just field them from the audience here. So, you know, we don't necessarily have to go through the text line unless you want to remain anonymous. But we'll still know who you are.
It's very easy to narrow down.
Yes, right. Yeah. Oh, people who, oh, that's great. I didn't even think about that.
Are there people watching?
There are a few people watching on the live stream. So, yeah, very good. All right. So the first question is, how do we reason with a society or an individual which cannot either reason or does not recognize the need to reason on principles?
I mean, there's not much you can do, I suppose. I mean, we talked about the fool and how the fool, sometimes it's prudent not to interact with the fool. You lower yourself to their level. So, yeah, there's a lot of people, especially like in the online world, there's a lot more of them that are bolder to say things behind a keyboard. I just don't interact with them, especially if they have like 2 followers. Like, there's no reason to. Yeah, I mean, you have to assess. So if that's the assessment, right, if you've gotten to the point where, like, this person is impenetrable to reason, then you don't reason with them anymore. Why would you waste your time? There's tons of people out there who are susceptible and able to reason. So you don't just keep beating your head against a door.
Yeah, I like that because it kind of goes back to some of the things you were saying about wisdom regarding sometimes you have to consider your audience, like you said. Like, it may not even be the person you're talking to, but then there could be other people who are watching or listening or whatever else. So I think that comes in. That's kind of interesting. And then the whole,
yeah,
the Proverbs, that dual answer a fool, don't answer a fool, right?
Right.
Back-to-back verses in the book of Proverbs. So, yeah, go ahead, Phil.
What if your family members?
Yeah. I feel like I should be asking you this question because I don't have like anything to add to that. I can just say that I relate to that to some extent, having situations in my own family where I've had to have very hard conversations and I've had to assess threats and you know, what is permissible and what's not. And yeah, there's some people that I cannot, I've realized I have done everything that I can and there's nothing else for me to say. And I just pray that the Lord works on their heart. The situation you're describing is more heart-wrenching than some of the ones I think I'm thinking of, because you're talking about, like, sounds like grandkids that you can't see who are probably captive, that are innocent parties in this and aren't necessarily, and that's, I guess, where you just have to trust God that, you know, that he'll take care of them. And, I mean, you can't compromise the truth, right? You can't, I don't know what the situation in specifics is, but if it's a matter of, like, you need to say up is down and down is up, you can't just do that. Give up your Christianity or anything like that. Those are fundamental things. If you did that, you would be compromising in ways that you would be ashamed of. And even if it's for the cause of seeing grandkids or seeing kids. And I understand that, by the way. Like, I'm not very harsh against people who do sometimes make decisions that I don't think are wise, but because of situations like that, they want to make sure that they have an open door to influence others. So it's very complicated, and it's one of those things, I think, for someone like Ken, where you're in a counseling situation, you can better determine how to navigate that. It's hard for me with generalities.
Seems like it's epidemic now. Not
oh, Yeah. There's people in my church who I know, like, their kids are transgender, say they are, and they don't want to talk to their parents. And it's like, unless you accept me, I'm... And I've seen parents cave to that. But, and I'll say this. Whenever I've seen parents cave to it, it's always been bad. They always end up... It's like the off-ramp from church. It's always... I can think of one couple in particular in my head right now. Daughter, I'm a lesbian. You know, how to accept my partner. And they were sort of resistant, but they wanted to have Thanksgiving. And, you know, okay. But they ended up eventually, they just accepted it. And then that was, well, we can't go to church anymore because they felt ashamed. And then, boom, they're no longer living as Christians. And but I know others who have taken the high road and they have, I'm going to be firm on this. You know, the door is always open, but this is who I am. You're the one who's rejecting me, you know. I'm here if you need me, and I'm I always will be. But, you know, and they just mourn for it. So, it's lonely. Yeah, it's heartbreaking. And, yeah, it's something to pray about for sure. But I do know of situations, though, where people have navigated it where it's like, it's hard. I have so many questions when someone tells me that they're in this situation, but it's like, yeah, my daughter comes with her and brings her lesbian partner, but we don't treat them that way, and they have to sleep separately, and we just treat her as a friend. And I'm like, that's so hard for me to conceptualize how you would deal with it. But there are families, I think, who are good Christian families who have figured out how to do that in uncompromising ways. So if there's a route to take without compromising, I guess you try to take it, right?
Kind of along the same line of engaging with individuals who are unreasonable, at what point do you engage with the unreasonable person for the sake of the audience? You know you won't convince the person, but you may mitigate their effect on others. How might that look?
Yeah. So I had this situation like this not long ago, actually, I'm thinking of, where it was someone I knew was impervious to any kind of reasoning. And they were leading people down a dark path, in my opinion. And I had a conversation with someone who said, oh yeah, I saw that it was like an online thing. It was on Facebook, and they were like, hey, I saw that you were interacting there. And I realized then this was someone that I really wanted to see that interaction. I wanted them to know how to navigate this. Mm-hmm. So I decided, and it was also on my turf. Like, it was someone who came onto one of my posts or whatever, right? So I view that as like, you know, online ethics are still developing, but I view that as like, hey, you're coming into my house and you're spewing this stuff. So yeah, I'm gonna guard the people who follow my work. They need to be aware that you're wrong on this. I didn't do it for this person. I did it for those who would see our interaction. But if it's in an isolated case, if it's in this person I'm thinking of, there have been isolated cases where it's just me and this person, and I would never do it in those cases because I just know I'm wasting my breath and I'm not convincing them. So yeah, and you have to assess how obvious the error is too. Like, if someone's just, there's no danger of anyone getting taken in by their false teaching, for example, if it's a false teaching issue, then I don't know that you have the obligation. But if there's a real threat, you have to do a threat assessment. And Jesus was really good at this, because there were times that he did not engage as much with the Pharisees, and there was times that he came down really, really hard on them. You know, I think it's like with Matthew, I think 23, where he's like, it's woe to the Pharisees. It's like the whole chapter is just woe to the Pharisees. And then there was other times, though, where he just kind of, like, the crowd, probably some of them didn't even recognize that they were in a tangle. You know, Jesus was just very shrewd about it. So, yeah.
Okay, one more text here. Are the current corrupted seminaries reclaimable for truth? It's $1 million question right there. Huh?
Yeah, Russell Fuller was just here briefly. I wish he was here to answer that. He would say no. I was actually on a panel with him earlier this year, and there was four of us, and there was two guys who were like, oh, yeah, yeah, and then it got to him and me, and we're like, no, no. So I think it depends on, like, how knowledgeable you are, how much dirt you've heard about and you've experienced. And I'll just say that I've seen so many, in my opinion, crazy non-Christian kind of maneuvers in these institutions. It's hard for me to believe you can bring these some of these institutions back without firing half the professors and the admin. Like that's my I'm literally there. I'm like, hey, if you're in a cleanup house, you're gonna have to really get rid of a lot of people. So yeah, I mean, is it possible? Sure, but it would take drastic measures. And I just don't know that there's any sign on the horizon that that's going to happen. So I'm sorry to be discouraging to you, but in an encouraging word, I do think the Lord is using now new mechanisms to provide people in the pulpit. It's not so much from the seminaries. I think it's people from the churches that have the heart for it are being raised up. So we'll see where that goes. The Lord's going to not leave himself without a witness.
It's almost like the Lord knew what he was doing when he was having churches equip people within their churches. Huh?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Like, kind of like his original plan.
Yeah.
So.
Question, of all the dangers of clown world, from transgenderism to neo-Marxism to social justice in general, which is the most concerning in your opinion? Or is it even helpful to identify the number one problem to attack or just spray and pray and attack them all? I like that.
Spray and pray. Yeah. It depends on the time you're asking me and what, you know, is on. I think there's a general liberalism that pervades most people, whether they're aware of it or not. So that I see that as probably a big threat just because we don't always realize that we're swimming in it because we just adopt liberal notions. I'm trying to give a good example of this. So like, all right, women in leadership. Let me take that real quick. Women in like church leadership, but also beyond that, there is in the Bible you see an assumption that women are not to be in warfare. That's actually like a bad thing for women to be in law enforcement type of capacities. And even as I'm saying that, I'm already getting aware that I'm crossing lines. And I'm like, I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, how many of the people in here might have like a daughter or a sister or someone, an aunt who's in law enforcement or in the military? Am I offending them? I need to let them know that I think that it's not necessarily a sin, but like all these qualifications are already flooding to my mind, and there's like a, you know, danger Will Robinson kind of going off, and that's because I swim in liberalism. For most of human history, that was a duh. Like, of course women aren't going to be in the military. What are you, crazy? they're not, they can't compete with men. Like that was, it's only within the last 5 seconds that we've gotten we're on eggshells about that kind of a question. Right? There's a poem. Yeah, there's other ones I could bring up, but that's one of them. And so I think that that sort of wanting to be in the mainstream and wanting to just be equal and for equal rights and all, like, that ends up sometimes undercutting, I think, our biblical foundation and the created order that God set up. And so I think that that is dangerous.
Well, that's all the text. If there's any other questions, feel free to chime in at this point. Yeah. Gonna give you a microphone.
Oh, for the people
Yeah.
I was wondering, how do you engage with, especially like lay people or even people in ministry that are following more of these institutions that have been more swung left, like the Gospel Coalition, or, you know, potentially some of these Southern Baptist leaders? How do you engage with them? Especially, I found that very difficult.
How do I engage, like, personally?
Or how would you recommend someone engage?
Yeah, I mean, my engagements have usually been very short and curt. I have had them, but they're, most of them just try to ignore I exist.
And meaning more with, like, people that are still reading and kind of following them more than people. Yeah, because I found that's very difficult
to do. You asked this, you were talking about this earlier, and then we didn't, You asked an example. You said, do you have any examples of anyone who's been pulled out of that? And yeah, I do. There have been people who reach out to me and said, I was under these assumptions, and now I've been listening to your podcast. I realized I was under bad assumptions. And so I've heard that. Obviously, not everyone in here has the time to start their own podcast for their buddies to, like, you know, here, listen to. But there was an example I thought of a guy. This was before I had a podcast or anything. Who was definitely, he was on the left, I would say. He was veering that way politically, but he was also very much with the neo-evangelical winsome engagement model, like the Gospel Coalition, like all that stuff, and Tim Keller and ish stuff. And I remember I had a sit down with him. He was a seminary classmate. I remember where I was. I was in a car. It was a dark car. We had just gotten dinner or something. And I said, you know, it really seems to me like what's going on right now at the seminary is Marxist. And this was before we didn't even hear the term social justice, or woke wasn't even invented yet. This was probably 2014 or something. I don't remember. But I said to him that this is Marxist. I don't know how else to, you know, quantify it, but that's what it, and he was receptive. Like, he was listening, hearing me out. That guy is so, he's solid. He's definitely, like, I saw him get pulled from the brink, and it was through conversations. We had multiple conversations about it, but he was thinking biblically. That was the thing. And I think that's, like, the dividing line a lot of the time I notice. Like, if someone's willing to go to the scriptures and have the scriptures correct their understanding, there's hope. And he was like that. Like, he was going left because of misinterpretations. But when you interpreted it rightly, he would say, oh, you're right. It's the guys who don't care about scripture. They just like their favorite teacher. Like, I don't know. There's nothing you can do there, because they're just going to go with whatever their idol says. So, yeah. And I know that describes probably a lot of the people you're thinking of. So you just pray and you keep trying. And, you know, if the door closes, it closes.
All right.
So, I said what I don't want to say. I hate the mic. Okay. So, when walking along with someone who needs one of the three, tell me the words you used. What were the words? Either admonition.
Oh, the unruly, the weak, and the faint-hearted.
And that walk is just walking a long time, and you're trying to figure out, is this person just a fool, or is this just a slow process?
So you're like helping the weak, and
right,
then you're starting to assess, are they really weak, or are they
right,
just unruly?
This is something that my husband and I, we butt heads on, because I keep walking. I'm like, okay, come
question.
On. And he's like, cut, sling, load, let him go. How far do you go before you say,
man,
I'm out.
At what point is weakness really stubbornness? Non-confrontational stubbornness.
Or is stubbornness rejection?
Buttons on the bottom.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, if it's a matter of sinning, you forgive them 70 times 7, right? You keep forgiving. But if it's a matter of, like, am I going to invest my time in this person who doesn't seem to be making progress, then... Yeah, there does come a point where I think you have to cut it off, and I think that's different depending on the situation. To be quite honest with you, I don't know if there's like a, yeah, well, it, like it, well, think about it this way: like, if you have a child, I don't know if you're talking about, you know, your daughter in the back. If you're talking about your daughter, not yet. But if you're talking about her, like, you kind of have a responsibility to be a little more. You know, you don't just cut her off. But if you're talking about, like, someone who's distant from you, and you have to go out of your way, and you already have responsibilities at home and stuff, like, that's different. I grew up in a pastor's family, so there was needy people all over the place, all the time. And that was a hard thing to sometimes decipher. But I noticed, like, my mom got better at deciphering that, I think, over time, just because you, like, experience so much of this. You can tell, like, okay, does someone just want to talk, or do they, or, you know, and normally it goes like this. Someone comes to you, or they admit to you, I got this problem, you know, they I need help. Okay. You say, okay, here's, you know, three things that I want you to do that are reasonable, not like impossible things to do, but I want you to read your Bible every day this week, read these passages, memorize this scripture. I want you to go out of your way to do something nice to you for your husband. Right? And then the next week they come back and, hey, did you do those things? And if it's no, then okay. Now, this is what my mom would do. I'm just telling you what she would do. It's like, okay, well, when you do those things, come back and we'll talk. I have other things to do right now. Sorry. Right? So that's a practical thing I think you can do. And that will ensure, if that person doesn't want to make progress, they're not going to keep coming to you, because they just want to complain to you. They just want an ear for gossip, or for just, they just, you know, want to They want to feel all those nice things that you that well up in them when you tell them that they're special and that they can, you know, they want to believe that they can make it through this. So, you know, you may be draining yourself, but that leaves little for the people who actually do make progress. So I think if you start thinking that you're taking away from other people that God has put in your life to help, then you know that you have to cut it off, right? So.
a little change of pace, but could you, in the realm of politics, could you interact with those who have arguments that are people who say, referring to Donald Trump, I can't vote for him because he doesn't meet the qualifications of a leader in the
sure.
Bible. I think they refer to Exodus 18 or 19, you know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
Could you interact with the people who say they can't vote for him, and what would your answer be to whether or not to vote for Trump?
Yeah, that's where Moses appoints leaders to help him govern Israel because he doesn't have the capacity to meet all the people's needs, i.e. our last question. You're only one person and have a scale that's limited. So, and his father-in-law tells him, hey, choose men that are essentially virtuous. They can't be bribed, that kind of thing. And so people will use this and they'll expand it to be a universal. Remember when we were talking about ideology earlier? I see this as kind of oftentimes it comes from, and I gotta be careful how I say this. So, yeah, I know. This comes oftentimes from people who are abortion abolitionists or sometimes theonomists. And I am not saying that there are not people who carry those titles who are not reasonable and biblical and want the right things and, you know, all that, right? But there are people in those groups who are at least who carry those titles who I've met who seem to veer towards very rigid ideological thinking on this. And they really do make everything about this one issue, and they really do, they seem to have blinders on towards the big picture, so in my opinion. So, and we can explain more of that if you want. But because of that, they will take this passage, I think it's because of that, and they will create a universal out of it. Like, this applies to all situations in all ways, rather than, I think, looking at the context, which is just, there's a very practical problem. Moses can't divide himself into four people and govern Israel effectively. He has a scale problem. So finding people who are the most qualified, and they did have those kinds of people available to them who had met this character to meet this very practical end. It's actually a very practical thing. So people against pragmatism are the ones that bring it up, but it's like a very practical problem, and it's a very practical solution for a unique situation. So what's the universal application of that? Well, the universal application, I think, is recognizing that that there are limitations that leaders have, and that it's wise to get the most qualified men to meet meet the ends for which government is created. So now we're in a situation with Donald Trump, and we've already been through the primaries. Guess what? The selection process for finding a better candidate is expired. We only have two options at this point. That's if you buy into the whole, this binary. I think I do buy into that. I think that's effectively, you can vote for a third party, that's true, but you're not actually doing anything but showing that you don't agree. Like, you don't go with the system. You just don't. It's a statement of, defiance against the system, but it doesn't actually effectively make any decisions. If you want to actually participate in a meaningful way, it's going to be one or the other. So that's the point we're at now. So you have to judge, based on the same passage, you have to judge who is going to be the most highly qualified in the situation. We don't have available to us men who perfectly meet the standards that Moses was looking at. So there's nothing in the passage that commands you. There's nothing. It's a model. It's a wisdom principle. It falls into the category of wisdom and foolishness, not into the category of a rigid, very right and wrong. So last but not least, when it comes to voting for Donald Trump, I look at it practically. I think politics is the art of the possible. It is about practical things. On the abortion question, it's cut and dry for me. He's going to allow people to work with latitude on the state level to get abortion criminalized or at least to try to stem the tide. And Kamala Harris is not. So there's a very clear difference there. I mean, but there's a million other issues, too, to look at. Immigration's a big issue. If the Democrats get permanent majorities over the next 4 years, your abortion issue's gone forever. You're never, it's going to be like California. You're never going to get back into a position. And then when they have those super majorities, they will cram it down at a federal level. So it, you have to think in a strategic way, I think, in politics. And it's not like the offices in a church where like God has delineated these are rigid universal qualifications that must be met. You know, it's not this. You don't find the same kind of thing in Scripture when it comes to political leaders. Doesn't mean there isn't a standard, by the way, but it means that you can't. I think you can exercise in a democracy or in a republic where we have the chance to vote. You can't exercise that vote for someone who, yeah, on Judgment Day, Donald Trump will probably be judged by God for some of the evil things he's done or said or whatever. You can vote for that person because you're voting for a set of policies and a team that is going to ensure, at least, you know, as I look at my daughter, a better future for her or a less worse future for her than the alternative. So that's my best shot at it. I don't know if anyone in here is kind of that mindset, but I get very frustrated, as you can tell, because there's a lot of Christians. I was just at a conference that I was like one of the only ones at the conference. It was in Pennsylvania too, a swing state, that was like, hey, we should vote for Trump. And they were telling Christians not to. And I was like, okay. But
couple texts came through here. How do you suggest to handle a child who claims to be part of the LGBT community, but they're a minor outside of your house?
Minor.
So the child does not live with the parent.
Okay. So it's a divorce situation, and the child's with the other parent. The other parent has custody, I'm assuming. How do you, or you get them on, I guess you would have them on the weekends or something, and how would you handle it?
That's all the
okay.
Contact, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It doesn't. I feel like there's information, missing information that would help. I mean, this is the problem with divorced couples. No matter whether it's that issue or any behavior issues, like you only can establish rules for half the time or a portion of the time, and someone else is influencing them the rest of it. You just have to do your best in that situation. And there are legal ramifications now, unfortunately. So if you don't actually reinforce their identity and who they think they are, then you end up sometimes in legal trouble. And then I think the fear is that you will lose any influence on them, right? And that's pretty dicey. So I think you definitely have to be like a serpent in this case. And it does. So it does. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be, unless you think it's prudent, you know, out there all the time, bringing the issue up to this to your child. If they know where you stand, you know, and you're not compromising where you stand on it, you're not reinforcing their lifestyle decision, their sinful lifestyle, then I think, they're still your child. They can still live with you. They can, I mean, there's sinful children that live with their parents, but that's the main thing. You just can't, compromise on your biblical conviction there and say like, oh yeah, that's perfectly acceptable, you know. That would be, I think, where the problem would come in. So if that causes you legal problems, if they want to make, if your child's against you and wants to make an issue, then yeah, you're just gonna have to go with Christ on that. And he did, you know, he divided father and mother against, I mean, it's a sad passage, but we have to love him more than we love even our own families. So
that's so tough. Another question, what if a child's person that they look up to claims Christ, but they don't live a life that shows it? And so the context here, additional context provided, this person they look up to, they're in the family, so they're always going to be around in some capacity. So it's not like you can just remove your child from that person's influence.
Oh.
They're in the family. They look up to this person, but that person is not living as a believer, it seems.
So the parent is then reinforcing, is that the scenario then, these?
It says if a child's person that they look up to claims Christ, but they don't live like it, and that person is in the family.
I don't know. I mean, there's not much you can do. I would need to, yeah, there's not enough specifics there for me to really, like, it depends. Like, you could, if it's open, you can maybe, I don't know if you can confront the person who's the bad example. If they're causing danger, obviously, that you could adjudicate in court, there's no question. But, you know, on a spiritual level, you want to, on some level, I would think confront that. But if they're unreceptive, then what do you do? I mean, you do your best. I don't know what else to say. I need more information. So.
Okay.
All right. Anything else?
All right. What's that? Nobody stumped him. Oh, we're playing that game. That's a different game.
Wait, let me see that coin. Whose image is on this? I said, whose image is on this coin?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Well, we want to thank John so much for being here.
Thank you, Ken.
And just tremendous, tremendous job today. Greatly, greatly appreciated. And thank you all for coming. It's a joy to meet many of you and just to get to know you a little bit. And thank you. There's some of you I already know, so I say, you know, but